Welcome to the 19th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name's Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist living in Southwest Florida. I'm also an endurance athlete. Today's episode, I'm going solo. I am joined in the studio with my rescue cat, Vincenzo, and my rescue dog, Samantha. So if you hear some background noise, they were willing to provide background entertainment. Tonight, I'd like to speak to you about some of my passions and frustrations being a plant-based cardiologist, and I'd also like to address some of the recent articles on cholesterol and dietary guidelines concerning cholesterol. I've spent the last several years educating myself in nutrition after deciding to be plant-based and vegan. I've read numerous books, listened to numerous podcasts, heard numerous interviews. I've taken the eCornell course with Dr. Campbell. I've taken a wellness course with Dr. Pamela Popper. And heard many people interviewed and listened to many opinions and read just about every book available on the subject. Most of the podcasts and interviews you'll hear, some of the problems with physicians being that, medical doctors really never received any nutrition training in medical school. And that's actually correct. The only training really during medical school was that on how to treat people with intravenous solutions of vitamins, carbohydrates, fats, and proteins when they're unable to eat in order to sustain them so they can eat again. But that's pretty much where it's left off. We have basic biochemistry and know what a carbohydrate is and proteins and all that and how they're formed. But there was never any guidelines as far as, what you should eat. Pretty much like everybody else, you grow up eating a starch vegetable and a meat at the dinner table and the plate was complete and you weren't hungry, so it must be okay. But, medical school is just the beginning of a physician's education. It's certainly not the end of, it teaches us the basics of how the body works and pathology when things go wrong. But after medical school comes residency and then practice. And you call it practice for a reason, because physicians are continuously learning. There's new science being proven, disproven, and a good physician learns to change with the times and as we develop new knowledge. But it's in the physician's, it's in the corner of the doctor to self-learn and continue your medical education. And learning is basically a necessity for the lifetime of a physician. However, sometimes over the years we get lazy as far as fulfilling these, what we call continuing medical education hours. And sometimes we rely on easy methods and become kind of stale. We keep learning the same things. And some people rely on even pharmaceutical reps that often don't have any medical training whatsoever, just marketing training to educate us on their new medications or new procedures or new devices. And certainly we get a tainted view from those people. Sometimes physicians are given incentives with, vacations not so much anymore, but meetings and dinners and lunches to their office staff. People can become blind to perhaps the truth. All these medications and equipments provides money to the industry. And we forget to actually think and look into other ways to influence the health of our patients. We get caught up in prevention campaigns as well. Various look for the cure. Most of our medical care is looking to focus on finding a procedure to early diagnose a disease and or monitor the disease progression. And patients feel safe because they're being either monitored or followed or tested so that they feel that their disease will be caught early enough to be healed. But we don't do a whole lot to monitor people's health or to actually keep them healthy. We all get caught up in the slogans, if you had only seen your doctor sooner or if you only been screened. But the reality is we don't do a whole lot until disease is detected. And even then, we can't really do a whole lot to reverse it. And we're really happy if we can keep it under wraps or from spreading or under control, so to speak. That goes along with the whole industry, you know, the buses that come to church to do screenings and blood tests, donate blood, get your cholesterol test, wellness screens. They're really just superficial band-aids to allow us to calmly wait until disease occurs. You know, I believe in the real reward of being a doctor. And what most physicians want is to be able to kind of save the day, to be the hero, to cure, to stop suffering. We look to be compassionate in our treatments. We like to be trusted. And we certainly want to help people. I don't really think that it's the medical profession's intention by any stretch of the imagination just to come and see how much money we can make off of people's pain and suffering. But we also get lost in the shuffle, as I noted above. You know, I think it's somewhat satisfying to be there in a patient for their time of need. Sometimes, you know, that just means being just supportive and encouragement. We all remember the Marcus Welbys of way back when basically there was just hand-holding. But there was something to be said for a family knowing their physician and for the physician being there in times of sickness and an end of life to help families and the patient. You know, occasionally there's a save, and, you know, we all remember our saves, but the reality of it is those saves are few and far between, and most of what we do is just maintain the status quo. I'm a physician in my later part of my career. I've been a physician since 1987. The reality of it is that since that time, as a cardiologist, I've treated coronary artery disease with basically the same procedures. The medicines haven't changed a whole lot. I treat arrhythmias. I treat valvular heart disease. But for the most part, what I do day in and day out is fairly constant. And, you know, oftentimes at the end of the day, it's not that rewarding. People still stay sick. People still stay on their medications. So that's kind of why when I discovered plant-based medicine and learned about the ability of what you eat to actually reverse disease as documented by a stress test or documented by catheterization, that my passion for medicine was actually renewed. It was a very interesting subject for me to study. It still is. I enjoy reading about any book I can get my hands on it, both plant-based and those really as an alternative to plant-based. And, you know, I've been convinced with looking at all the books that, you know, the plant-based therapy is the only way that you can reverse disease and decrease your risk of actually getting valvular heart or getting vascular heart disease or coronary artery disease or decreasing your risk of stroke, dementia, and some cancers. And there's a real chance to cure people and to prevent disease from occurring and to reverse disease that's already there. And now Wynn is basically looking to take people off their medications and help them feel healthy again, allowing them to become trim and active, to get rid of their aches and pains and start to enjoy, you know, the daily living. And, you know, that's very rewarding as a cardiologist. And certainly, you know, the ability to prevent people from having a heart attack or the need for bypass or stents or the complications associated with any of those procedures is huge. So it may seem odd for a physician, especially a cardiologist, to stand here or sit here and say, you know, I would like to treat medicine or people with nutrition. There's certainly, you know, procedures that I could perform. But I would be happy if we never had to perform any procedures anymore. I'm not really worried about how I'll make a living. I think when you do something for the right reason, everything always works out. You know, I'm not worried about who will I treat. There's so much disease out there at such a young age and people these days that you can spend a lifetime just getting this message out. So when I started getting into this, the more I read, the more excited I became, and I really couldn't wait to convince people, especially, you know, first people are the ones closest to me, you know, my family and my coworkers. And I was so excited at first, you know, I expected everybody, just as soon as I give them this information that I've gleaned, to kind of join. But the reality of it is I've been somewhat of a small voice in the choir of, you know, gloom and doom. You know, people wonder, it's like, well, if this answer of just eating the right way is what it's all about, then why haven't they heard it before? It's also a radical change from the standard American diet that most people were raised on. And, you know, diet is kind of like, what you eat is kind of like religion. And, you know, how could something that's been handed down generation after generation in your family and been the basis for gatherings of happiness and sadness, how could that possibly be the cause of disease? Dr. Tuttle, William Tuttle, refers to, and he wrote a book, and hopefully get him on soon, called The World Peace Diet. And it's an excellent read. I would recommend it. But basically it talks about, you know, why it's so foreign for us to think of just eating plants and not eating animals. But he refers to veganism in stages, I guess kind of like mourning stages. But stage one is basically realizing the truth and wanting to spread the word, but nobody's really ready to be the audience. And I think that certainly happened to me, both in my family, and I couldn't wait to tell everybody everything about how protein can cause cancer, especially, you know, animal protein, milk protein, how eating, you know, animal products, or the inflammation that's caused with eating animal protein, animal fat, and just by changing your diet, that you can reverse this, that we don't need abundant sources of calcium. People that are places and countries that have lots of calcium intake and dairy in the form of dairy typically have osteoporosis. I thought, man, this was just a no-brainer, that we don't need to eat any dairy anymore, and we don't need to eat any meat, and everybody would just jump in. But most people saw it as, or I guess family members even saw it as, you know, a fad, or what have you thought of this time, and weren't really ready to jump on the wagon at first, and for quite some time. And the same thing kind of happened in the office. You know, after reading Forks Over Knives, I pretty much was convinced that this is how I wanted to practice medicine, and how great it would be to be able to take people off their medications, not have to have them have any heart attacks anymore, because that's really what I do this for. I don't do this to wait till people have heart attacks. I do it to prevent heart attacks and to prevent heart failure and to prevent dying from heart disease. And I thought, man, if this is so simple to be able to do this and take people off their medications and, you know, save money for them, save money for our government, how great this would be. And, you know, I was so excited to tell the patients. And, you know, when people would come in and they would come to see me, and I would say, well, you know, and start to present the data, they would just kind of start to look at me with, you know, the starry-eyed, you know, look back at, like, well, you know, what could you possibly be talking about? And you know, why would I possibly want to do this? And this is such a radical change. And, you know, what kind of real proof did I have? Because nobody else had ever said that before. They've never read it. It's never been on TV. Everybody says, eat your dairy, eat your calcium, eat your protein, you know, eat a low-carb diet. How could, you know, what you're saying be the right thing? And I'm going to be restricted. My family's, my friends aren't going to want to eat with me. What will I eat? You know, I'll be starving. And some people, man, I don't feel that bad right now, you know, so why would I want to change it? Or if I just have a bypass or take a pill and it fixes it, then why can't I go on with my daily living? And some people in the community that don't really see people as referrals were kind of shocked to hear this. I think most people on a first line on the first line of medical care, whether it be primary care people or specialists, pretty much understand that, you know, most patients come to see the doctor to get a cure, to get treatment. They're not really there to go back or to hear that they've caused a problem or that they need to be the ones that take, you know, fix this. And certainly, you know, I don't mean that people, you know, of their own free will just went out and ate, you know, pork rinds to cause disease and expected physicians to take care of it. I, you know, obviously it's part of not knowing and, you know, the way we were brought up. So it's certainly not people's fault. But I, you know, I kind of expected at first for people to at least listen and consider. And that really wasn't the case. I've spent about, you know, 45 minutes to an hour with a new patient that comes in talking about plant-based way of treating and preventing illness. And, you know, sometimes you see the wife, you know, you can see anger building up in people, whether it's anger because they feel accused or anger because they're going to have to change, or I'm not sure exactly what it is. But a lot of times, you know, the whoever does the cooking doesn't really want to have to change. And, you know, I think they've also been down that road with different fad diets, you know, whether it's a Weight Watchers or a Nutrisystem or some other diet that they've all tried and got on the bandwagon with, only for it to fail. So you see right there in their face, it's like, oh, no, you know, not another trip down this, you know, diet road that's not going to work and going to backfire, and we're going to fight, you know, while we're doing it, and it's going to cost us money, and on and on and on. So I think that's a lot of the pushback that I need, like, you know, need to get. But, you know, so I've tried to change my approach, you know, and different times of the day and different people. I really do try to change how I present things. You know, we were all largely in the United States raised eating essentially the same thing. There may be a little ethnic twist on things, but, you know, we grew up in households that, you know, were like I talked to, you know, before, that we ate meat and we ate dairy and, you know, we ate a vegetable. And if you ate a couple vegetables a day, you were, you know, considered really doing good. And certainly where I grew up in West Virginia, you know, the availability of fresh vegetables was certainly there in the summertime. But a lot of people still eat canned vegetables and frozen vegetables because it's just hard to get. You know, I certainly can't get it local. You know, it's fresh produce is hard to come by and sometimes not that good. You know, I can remember when I lived in West Virginia in the wintertime, you know, tomatoes were these hard things without any taste. So certainly, you know, you weren't looking for those. Cucumbers didn't have much taste. So, you know, it's difficult in some areas, and people do the best that they can. It's also hard to realize that a chronic disease could be influenced on what you eat daily, and certainly how what you eat daily could reverse chronic disease. You know, if we did truly spend a lifetime getting these diseases, how could just changing our diet actually reverse things? You know, I think in people's minds, are they too far gone? So, you know, give me something safe like a medication or a procedure to kind of fix this now. And then I'll try to change my diet a little bit or make things better, gradually change things. But relying on diet to actually be the intervention is very foreign to people. I remember one of the first books I read on cardiovascular disease reversal was by Dean Ornish. And, you know, even Dr. Ornish in University of California, San Diego, he you know, allows some nuts and a little bit of fish. And he doesn't come right out and say, you know, he says the closer you are to being plant-based and low oil, no added oil, the better you'll do. But he doesn't come right out and say that this is, you know, so you have to be strict this way, but suggest it. And of course, there's a multi-pronged approach to his, you know, with meditation and being supported by family and having good social, psychosocial relationships are all part of it. But I thought even the dietary aspect with not cooking with oil and, you know, restricting actually, you know, no dairy or meat. I thought, man, that would be radical to try to present that to my patients at first. And, you know, I would be very selective of who I would mention it to. And I actually kind of, you know, surround it with, this is really hard and really radical, but it does have evidence that it works if you're willing to try and, you know, buy the book and read it and see what you think. And there were very few takers to his practice. And then when I saw Forks Over Knives and, you know, read Dr. Esselstyn's book, and, you know, he was even more strict, and I thought, well, you know, this is the way to go, but it's even a harder sell in some people. We've been marketed to all our life, you know, to enjoy salty food, fatty food, sweet foods. You know, it's, if you go on Facebook, you can see, you know, people posting these recipes dripping with grease and cheese and, you know, sweet stuff, you know, sugar on chocolate on caramel on, you know, on and on and on. And yeah, sure that they taste good, but, you know, after being off of that, you look at that and you just see all the terrible things that can happen. But people don't realize that they see the here and now, it tastes good. Making that for your family would make them happy. You know, going out to restaurants and eating this stuff makes everybody happy. The commercials show people enjoying themselves. Everybody does it. You know, why should I have to be the guy that suffers? And it's very difficult. And we're also told that genetics take care of our fate for the most part. So there's no need to worry because it is what it is, and what's going to happen is going to happen. And the reality of it is, you know, I'm convinced that, you know, 5%, 10% best is your genetics. The rest is what your environment is. But again, it comes down to, you really don't want to hear that your environment that you enjoy and you've chosen is the what's really causing the problem. You know, am I going to live one more year longer if I eat this way? Or am I going to give 10 more years longer? Is it really going to work? Am I going to deprive myself of all these things and, you know, and still die of my disease that I was genetically predetermined to? So people are very skeptical. You know, the other thing, the doctor-patient relationship, over the years has, you know, somewhat changed. You know, it used to be more of the, this is what you should do, and there wasn't that many things for a doctor to say for a patient to do, but it was somewhat respected. And, you know, as we've evolved and as it should be, you know, the it's been more of an education, so educate the patient and let them make an informed decision. But nevertheless, the role of the doctor and the patient has been, you know, for the doctor to diagnose and to provide treatment. And it's become the norm for people to look around. And as you get older, you get wider and you get heavier and you get arthritis and you take cholesterol medications and high blood pressure medications. And everybody knows somebody with diabetes. So there's really a lot of things that need to be changed in the doctor-patient relationship in order to help people to help themselves through nutrition. I also think there's a fear in the medical community that what if I'm wrong, or what if this theory is wrong and my patients don't change, or what if they tell me they're going to change and they don't, but then they have a heart attack and they say, well, I've changed, but I still had a heart attack despite what you said, doc. You know, I ate plants and I had a heart attack, or I had cancer. There's, you know, there's always a law firm out there willing to take the doctor to task for not being right, for not curing the patient. So, you know, in the world we live in today, I think a lot of doctors follow fear-based medicine. You know, I think if you have a good relationship with your patient for the most part, you know, you don't have to worry about that. But, you know, new patients, people that you don't know, it's pretty hard to say, you know, you're having chest pain, just go home and eat this way. And if, you know, if you don't get a good feeling that they're going to try to work with you, then, you know, I'm not so sure how much you can offer. And the other thing is time. You know, a lot of practices are really driven by the need to see a high volume of patients to pay the bills. And this is certainly not easy because you're starting to talk to people about something that's completely foreign to them. And it's, you know, you can prescribe a medication or sign somebody up for a procedure a lot quicker than you can explain why they should eat a plant-based diet. We've started in the office, you know, doing some different things that I'll talk about, you know, below. And, you know, for the most part, I find it very rewarding. But it is frustrating at times when you really try your best and and you really don't get through to people. I started my practice with the sole intent is to treat patients and treat people like I want my family to be treated if they were to go to the doctor or the hospital. I've always run my practice that way. I've always ran my practice that I need to educate people so that they can make informed decisions. I come from a family of teachers, and they were good teachers. And, they've always said that if they can't get a student to learn, it wasn't really because of them. It's because the way they presented it. And so they need to present it in a way that the student can understand and learn. And I feel the same way. I think that it's my job to educate people enough that they're able to make that decision. And if they decide not to do a plant-based diet or do an intervention or take a medication, as long as I know that they understand what it is I'm trying to tell them, and the benefits and the risk and the rewards, then, that's certainly their decision to make that choice. I've also tried to be representative of a healthy individual. I took up running marathons, for myself, to maintain my weight, try to prevent me from getting the diseases that, I'm genetically prone to. Cardiovascular disease runs rampant in my family. Diabetes runs rampant in my family. I know, from my training that if you're overweight, your chances of getting adult onset diabetes are certainly high. Heavy people are in my family. I know that they ate a very high caloric diet and not a very healthy diet looking back, even for someone that's not educated in the plant-based, realm of things. I knew the diet was, very fat and cholesterol laden. But, I took up running to try to promote a healthy lifestyle and exercise to help Kate stay fit. I actually frame my finisher's t-shirt and the medals and hang them up in the office for people to look at. Sometimes I put the map of the race course up there so people can, look and see where I ran through whatever cities. It's been a hobby to do marathons in large cities and all over the world. So you can see maps from Paris or Dublin or Rome in the office. It's kind of funny because some of my older patients will ask me, did I win? Because they'll see the finisher medal up there, and what was my time? And one lady asked me if I actually run in the Olympics because of the Rome finisher's medal. Kind of looks like a bronze medal. And then of course I have to tell them the truth that I probably finished someplace around 10,000s, and they just look at me like, why would you even, and somebody asked me at one point, why would you even do that if you were going to finish so poorly? And maybe if I practiced a little bit more, I could get better and, do better. And, I just kind of smile, and tell them, and I try my best, and I do it to try to stay healthy and kind of for my own time. But a lot of people just don't understand why you would put yourself through that kind of pain and agony to do so poorly as far as number one and number two are concerned. So over time, and you've heard the story if you've listened to this podcast before, my family's adopted a plant-based diet. And my mom at 81, she says if she were younger, she'd actually open up a vegan restaurant because she likes creating recipes so much now. And she does a fantastic job. She'll say she doesn't know what she wants to cook at night, but then she'll come up with this fabulous meal. And it's always great, adding a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and she pairs things really good, and she does great. My daughter even stuck with it in college, dorm food, and ate what she could. She's been known to go through a drive-through window with friends and order a hamburger without the bun, trying to stay plant-based at times. I'm sorry, she'd order a hamburger without the hamburger and just have the buns and the toppings. Which, again, it's not very healthy, but, she was staying plant-based. My family's been always, very supportive. They might think I'm crazy at first, but then, they always kind of get on the team and, support me, whether it's, again, going someplace to run a marathon or whatever other endeavor I'm starting. And I have to say that my staff in my office has been that way as well. My nurse is named Dawn, and my front office Biller's name is Barbara, and we've been together since I've been in Port Charlotte. And, you know, we've got along great, and they've, you know, listened, and they get on the bandwagon trying to educate people, and they're largely plant-based. And, you know, they're just very, very supportive, and they like the idea of running a practice like a family as well. And, you know, it's a tremendous asset that we're kind of a united front in what we do. In the office, you know, we try to walk the walk. I give menus. I tell people what I ate the last couple of nights. You know, I try to describe it. And, you know, generally that kind of resonates with people because, you know, I usually try to get food on the table or, you know, if my mom cooks, she does. And, you know, but less than 30 minutes. And we eat regular food. It might be, you know, beans, sweet potato, and greens. It can be very simple. It's not elaborate food. It's very simple food that you can, you know, pick up at any grocery store. I have books in my office. I have Dr. Esselstyn's Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease and some cookbooks. We give websites. You know, I started this podcast to try to have success stories for my patients to listen to, have nutritionists other than myself, you know, talk about this diet. And we spend a whole lot of time talking in the office. You know, the first visit, we, you know, I give people the whole lecture as much as they'll listen to or as much as I think they're willing to accept. And then when they come back, we discuss it, and I have them write down questions. And, you know, if they're willing to keep trying, you know, I'll go to the end with them as far as trying to educate them. However, sometimes we just get stares of shock and disbelief, and they just really don't want any part of it. And it's kind of amazing. I've had patients that have lost loved ones to diabetes, heart, and, you know, sudden massive heart attacks, and they have the same thing wrong with them, but they'll flat out say they don't want to give up meat or dairy, and they love cheese. And, you know, I only just encourage them to, you know, watch Forks Over Knives or listen to some of the material and then try again. But, you know, it's very difficult at times. I think that, you know, the plant-based public and, you know, people that are in the choir can't believe anybody would ever not want to take, you know, be a plant-based, follow a plant-based diet versus, you know, have some sort of open-heart procedure or another procedure that you could have a stroke, heart attack, or death from, but they just don't see it. You know, they see that 1%, 2%, 3% risk. They don't see that as, you know, 30 people for every 3,000. You know, having death with a bypass. They don't see themselves as one of them. And you know, maybe that's good that they don't realize their own vulnerability at this point, but. And you certainly don't want to take people's hope away from their as far as their health goes, but it does make it difficult in getting people to do make dietary changes a lot of the time. You know, most time slots in medical practices can be 10, 15 minutes or 30 to 45 minutes for a new patient, and that's a lot of time to get in the highs and hows and the whys and the benefits and how you actually do a plant-based diet. So. You know, it's a lot to take in as a patient, especially when you weren't expecting that at all. You know, sometimes when I fail getting my message across, and I feel bad that I fail. And you know, sometimes I think, you know, I'm too enthusiastic and I hit them with too much at once. Sometimes I think maybe I cause people to take it personal, that, you know, they caused their problem and they want to be that way. And I know that's not the truth. And I feel bad for spouses that, again, you know, they've cooked all their life and maybe didn't really want to cook, certainly don't want to cook now. They're tired. They don't want to learn a new way of cooking. And they certainly don't want to be accused of being the one that caused their spouse's problems. Not that I come right out and say it, but, you know, it's inferred when you hear that message. You know, I try to steer clear of blaming anyone. You know, we're all... you know, a product of how we were brought up. You know, I start out right away telling people, you know, hey, I'm from West Virginia. You know, I've eaten everything and done everything I say now not to do. My grandmother was known throughout her community for being a wonderful cook. There's no one that doesn't associate her name with just being a fantastic cook and baker. And for her, it was truly a labor of love. And she could, you know, we always say she could make something out of nothing. And yet, when I look back, there's only a few of her dishes that I wouldn't recommend, that I would recommend now or even eat without, you know, modification. Largely everything, you know, contained lard. It was certainly every meal had meat. There was a tremendous amount of sugar applied to everything. You know, there was fresh vegetables, but, you know, oftentimes they were canned with meat. So, you know, I would never have wanted to hurt her feelings, you know, but I also think in my heart that, you know, if she were here today and knew that changing the way she cooked could help her or her family live longer, I think she would do it in a heartbeat. I think she would really change, just like my mom changed. You know, so, you know, I don't feel bad about saying, you know, what she made was unhealthy, because for the time, you know, it was what people knew, and she fed her family, and she fed her family well, and nobody went to bed hungry, and that was what it was all about. You know, when I'm talking to my patients, I try to start with the science of disease, and you know, and I like to talk about how the endothelium was affected by oil, fat, and the animal protein. The cholesterol medications that we give don't address the issue with the endothelial dysfunction. It doesn't fix anything as far as the inflammation and the damaged endothelium and the lack of nitric oxide production. It changes numbers of cholesterol and LDL, but it doesn't fix the, it's a Band-Aid, you know, and it's hard to get across to people. Everybody knows somebody that lived to be 90 years old that smoked cigarettes and, you know, ate bacon. But again, you know, maybe they would have lived to be 120 had they not. And, you know, maybe they wouldn't have had Alzheimer's when they died or had been in such pain from arthritis. So, you know, we always remember, and it's a good thing about human nature, we always remember the good. We don't remember so much of the bad. When I first start talking about the actual practice of plant-based nutrition, I try to start with what is included in the diet before talking about what we have to exclude. I'm torn with the use of the word vegan. I usually try to steer clear of it. It tends to turn people off. They don't want to be associated with people that cause trouble, people that go against, again, how they were brought up. Even and people don't want to be reminded of animal cruelty. You know, none of us want to be cruel. We'd all like to think that we're compassionate, and that's just the way, you know, we don't want to remember how things are. That's why I think the book, if you can get people to read Dr. Tuttle's book, you know, World Peace Diet, it's a very good read, same way as A Diet for a New America. We just need to be awakened of where our food comes from and that we don't need animal products in order to live. I started offering a plant-based nutrition course in the office. We meet six times for an hour. That's each session. And we go over menus and the science of the disease and talk about problems that people have. You know, often if you have a spouse that you have to cook for, family members, children, grandchildren, you know, how you get around that. How do you go out and eat if you can? You know, what's the best way to shop? What's the latest on what you should eat, what you shouldn't eat? What organic things should you try to get? And so I think that's been very helpful. It's been easier to get the message across. People seem to be more receptive. And certainly when you come on your own to a class, and there's a little bit of a charge for it. I don't charge for spouses, but I think it gets people to commit to thinking about it and learning about it. I give a lot of handouts, and I think it's working. And I think that, you know, the 6 hours total of class gives people enough information and menus and experience that they can learn more on their own. Now, I'm certainly available with email for anybody that wants to you know, contact me with questions. And, you know, most of the patients are people that I see in the office anyway, so they can bring up questions and I can kind of follow along And, you know, the goal is to take people off their medications. You know, I've had several people that we've been able to back down on their cholesterol medicines, get rid of it, get rid of some of the blood pressure medicines. So, you know, it does certainly work. You know, I've had people eliminate their chest pain with, you know, eating greens several times a day. So I've seen success. The other thing that I'm involved in the community is called Charlotte County Plant-Based Foodies. And that's a group on meetup.com, which is a website. You can get the app for your phone. And we meet once a month and discuss plant-based, no added oil nutrition, go over the do's and don'ts, talk about some recipes, talk about problems that people have in their life. You know, the biggest thing is, you know, where people want to go to socialize, how they socialize with friends that aren't plant-based, how they interact with other family members. So it's a support group that I think is doing good. We often, several times throughout the year, we'll go to a restaurant and we'll speak with a chef beforehand and get a plant-based, no added oil menu that people can choose two or three things from, and then their spouses can come and get a try of it. So I think that, you know, that in the long run is a really good thing. Our membership has grown. There's actually several of them in our area. I've spoken at several of them. And again, if you have a meetup in your community and you're anywhere close or any place that I visit, I'd be happy to speak. I think the more that we can educate the public, the more we can educate restaurants and chefs into making plant-based meal with no added oil and salt and you know, sugar, could limit the sugar, that the better it will be for everybody. You know, my goal would be to put hospitals out of the cardiac business. I like to see them not make any money on cardiac patients. Right now, 45% of Medicare dollars are based on cardiac procedures. Doesn't need to happen. I totally agree with Dr. Esselstyn. You know, well, only for the people that are having acute event do we really, really need to have procedure reform. If people can just try nutrition, I think we can go a long way to, you know, preventing a lot of bad things from happening to people through procedures and medications. I would love getting people off their medications and see more people outside enjoying life. You know, personally, I'd like to be doing endurance activities well into my 90s. You know, I hope I get to Kona before 90, but I certainly wouldn't mind getting there at 90. I hope we can put more classes on in my office. I'd like to do some immersion weeks, weekends too, for people to come from out of town. And if anybody listening to this podcast would be interested in doing a week, you know, in a Florida location with some activities planned, you know, I'd love to hear from you. Again, I'm willing to speak anywhere about this topic. I'm very passionate about it. I think the more people that learn, the better. You know, I hope to start some online educational programs. Certainly willing to answer any emails with this regard. And I'd also like to solicit help from, you know, you that are my listeners. What do you think are effective ways to help people get plant-based? You know, what would your family need to learn in order to support you? You know, what can I do for you to make this transition easier? You know, what kind of programs would you like to see? You know, I certainly like to hear from you. You know, I can always be contacted at jamiedelaney@gmail.com. And you can also, you know, always leave a comment at the podcast too at jamiladelaney.podbean.com. It's always great to hear from people and, you know, get some feedback. In the next couple of weeks, we're going to have some really good guests. I'm going to be interviewing Tom Campbell, which is Dr. Colin Campbell's son, and his program that he has with his family medicine practice. I'm also going to be interviewing Howard Jacobson, who was a co-author of Whole, written with Dr. T. Colin Campbell. He's an educator and follows plant-based nutrition and is very intrigued by the education. We spoke briefly earlier, and you know, he was very surprised that people don't kind of jump on the bandwagon and become plant-based. But, I think it has to come from within, and people have to make that choice, and then I'm certainly there ready to help educate them. Also, I have plans to interview Chef AJ, who wrote a wonderful cookbook, Unprocessed, and hear her journey. It's fantastic. She's a very, very dynamic speaker. She's also done some guest cooking at True North Health, and is a big advocate of the no oil, no salt, no sugar way of lifestyle. So there's a lot of good things coming up. I continue to learn on how to educate people and what's effective. I'll continue to try to find ways to make this podcast exciting, make my practice exciting. I want to keep things positive. We all fall off the wagon. Nobody is 100% perfect in being plant-based or anything else. So it's a matter of trial and error. I think you need to remember that if you have a bad day or you go out or you're in a situation that you didn't eat as well as you would have liked, the next day is always a way to rectify that. That being said, I think to become the healthiest, you need to try to do the best that you can, because every time you do eat the fat and the oil and the animal protein, you are damaging those endothelial cells, and you have to start back again at repairing them. So do what you can each day to eat the best that you can. Continue to learn. Watch YouTube videos. Dr. Esselstyn, Dr. McDougall, Dr. Furman, Dr. Clapper. They're all fantastic resources. Try listening to some other podcasts. Again, Howard Jacobson has a podcast. The Rich Roll podcast often has people with nutrition. Main Street Vegan interviews people. So there's the Hen House interviews some people as well, plant-based nutrition. Learn as much as you can. Again, give me feedback if you know something that you want to hear or somebody that you want interviewed or something you want to include in the podcast. Again, contact me at jamiedelaney@gmail.com. So for now, it's good night, and I hope you all are plant strong and healthy.